Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene, Monday, March 21st, 2011.
From Washington, Adam Simitsky, Deutsche Bank. Adam, good morning.
Hey, Ken and Tom.
I'm Tom. That's Ken.
I know that.
What have you learned about oil in the last couple of days? What's the thing we need to know that you and your research staff have come up with?
Well, we've got 1.4 million barrels a day of Libyan light sweet crude, very low sulfur, hard to replace, out of commission. And it sure looks like, given events over the weekend, Tom, that this is going to be out for a while.
Is it replaceable? I mean, you mentioned it's a quality crude.
Well, the Saudi oil, which is where the spare capacity lies, has a sulfur content that runs from about 1% up to a little under 2%. The Libyan crude is between 0.5%. So directly, no, you cannot directly replace the Libyan crude with Saudi. So Saudi oil will have to go to a refinery that can take the heavy, high sulfur crude, it's a lighter crude, but the high sulfur crude, and run that.
Right.
And then we, you know, have to do logistical maneuverings, and this is why oil prices have gone up.
Well, it's a beautiful explanation. It is logarithm month here. Let's be on the edge of Bernoulli and talk about what does it tactically mean? Libya's oil's not coming out. You assume we use Saudi oil. Where does that oil go to get refined? Where is the marginal refinery capacity to solve the quality issue?
Right. So that is India, China, and maybe in the U.S., and then some of the sweeter crudes that don't have as much sulfur will find their way into those refineries in Europe that don't have the upgrading capability. I think this is already beginning to take place. I mean, one of the other factors behind the oil price rise is it looks like the Libyan oil will be out for a while, and spare capacity, you know, because 1.4 million barrels a day of Libyan oil is not there. That means the Saudi spare capacity is that much lower, and that is worrying to the markets because you have one more problem somewhere, and it's going to cause havoc in the oil markets.
Yeah, quickly, Ken, here. Citigroup off that at $4.50. They were at $4.56, now $4.68 on that 1-for-10 stock split.
Adam, how do you factor in Japan? I mean, on the one hand, if their economy slows enough, that'll cut into demand. On the other hand, are they going to need more oil to generate electricity to take the place of nuclear?
And the answer is yes to both of those. That in the short run, there's a little bit less demand because of the chaos that exists in northern Japan. So not as much consumption. There are a few refineries that are out of commission. That means that then Japan was a products exporter into Asia. So that's holding up refining margins for things like diesel fuel and gas oil going into Asia. As reconstruction begins, you know, and that should start up in a month or two, then replacing those nuclear power plants is going to require a little bit more coal, LNG, liquefied natural gas, and oil. We figure about 150 to 200,000 barrels a day more oil. And that would be, you know, compared to, that would be adding to the growth in oil demand about 10% in 2011.
Well, look, we're looking at about $103 now on NYMEX crude. Where does it go from here? Take us through the rest of the year.
A lot of this is going to depend on geopolitics, and then the second part to the answer that or the question that you asked, Ken, and that is that as long as oil prices stay in the, let's just say, below 115, 120, the global economy is still probably in pretty good shape. If for some reason, you know, another geopolitical event, oil prices shoot up beyond that, I think it would have pretty negative consequences for economic growth around the world, and then that would slow oil demand. So we, I think there's so many moving parts here that what we're going to see is oil prices over $100, probably inching up across the summer, and that means gasoline prices staying pretty high.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. The latest for this morning from AAA is about $3.55 a gallon nationwide average.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And of course, it's $4 and then some in some places.
And, you know, Ken does this every day, Adam, and it's a huge value, but frankly, it's creeping up, isn't it?
Yeah.
It has been. And, you know, the last time we went through this in 2007 and 2008, as we got to about $3.50, we started to see demand being eroded away. When we got to $4, that was, you know, that was the signal for consumers to take drastic actions to cut their gasoline consumption.
Well, that's the next question here, because that was sort of self-correcting, right? Everybody, you know, cut back and the price came back down. That's not going to happen this time?
Well, it could. If just as an example, worst case, oil goes to $150, our economics team says that could reduce global GDP growth by 2%. So instead of growing at 4 to 4.5%, we could be down to 2 or 2.5%. That would be a really bad hit to the global economy, and then that in turn would mean oil demand probably slow down pretty dramatically, might not grow at all. So that would be 1.5 million barrels a day of demand that you would lose, and just about the same amount of Libyan oil that you've lost. So these things do balance out in the end, but maybe the circumstances you don't like very much, or you want to avoid.
You have a terrific research piece, Adam. I featured it on Surveillance Midday. I want to pronounce this
right. Susanna Choi, who's in our Singapore office and is following commodities across Asia for Deutsche Bank.
What did she learn in her analysis?
Well, what she was looking at was different levels of expectations for the Japanese economy, and whether the recovery begins soon enough to pick the economy up relative to the downturn that they're going to experience in the short run. And the following after that, of course, would be the impacts on oil. So what we see is pretty much that we're going to have lower oil consumption over the course of the next month or two, but then it's going to pick up, and that'll add to overall oil demand as we go out into the second half of 2011.
So you don't see demand destruction at these prices?
Not yet. You know, one of the other interesting things, Tom, earlier you mentioned that the DXY, that dollar index, is headed down towards 75. We haven't seen that in quite a while. You know, the flip of that, if you just flip it, is the euro-dollar rate. And that's up to almost $1.42 this morning. We haven't seen that since back towards the end of 2009. And the oil prices, typically, as the dollar weakens, which is what both of those indices are telling you, tends to drive oil up. So again, you know, we've got geopolitical events driving oil prices, and we have some of these financial factors like the weakness in the dollar doing the same thing.
Well, briefly here, Adam, at what price are you going to start to worry about the overall U.S. economy?
I think somewhere near about $120 a barrel. So then the price to watch is really Brent and not WTI. The reason for that is that there's this glut of oil in Cushing, Oklahoma, and it makes more sense to look at Brent prices than it does WTI, and Brent is you know, well up over 110.
Okay, so the 120, real quick here, the 120 is the Brent price.
Right. In fact, Brent is just this morning. I mean, you know, we it's been moving around, but we're back up again towards those levels that we got to earlier in the month, where Brent is trading at nearly $116.
Where's your new base? Just in 20 seconds here. Do you have a new base case? Is it 80? Have you brought it from 65-ish up to 80?
Right. I think that just looking at what's going on with cost structures, with the requirements for spending in the OPEC countries, that oil is unlikely to get much below $85 or $90 a barrel.
Whoa, $85 or $90. Adam Simitsky, thank you.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on satellite radio, Sirius Channel 130 and XM Channel 129. Copyright 2011.